नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय. रीडिंग टुडे फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 10 चैप्टर 16 टेक्स्ट 55 एंड 56. Chapters entitled Krishna Chastises the Serpent Kalia. Pratilabdhendriya Prana Kalia Shanakai Harim Krichrat Samuchvasandina Krishnam Praha Kritanjali. The Supreme Personality of Godhead in humble submission. No purport. Text 56. Translation and purport by disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The serpent Kalia said, "Our very birth as a snake has made us envious, ignorant, and constantly angry. O my Lord, it is so difficult for people to give up their conditioned nature, by which they identify with that which is unreal." Purport. Srila Sanatan Goswami points out that because of his wretched condition, Kalia was unable to compose original prayers to the Lord, and thus he paraphrased some of the prayers offered by his wives. The word asatgraha indicates that a conditioned soul seizes upon impermanent and impure things such as his own body, the bodies of others, and other countless varieties of material sense objects. The ultimate result of such material attachment is frustration, disappointment, and anguish, a fact that has now become crystal clear to the poor serpent Kalia. Om Agyan. So, actually, since the translation says that this is Kalia's prayer, but actually if you read this, the start of Kalia's transformation, if you leave aside the name Kalia, it would be our desire to have this prayer that, you know, we are also envious, ignorant, constantly angry. Oh my Lord, it is so difficult for people to give up their conditioned nature, by which they identify with that which is unreal. So, actually, it is quite, this is really a special situation. We have heard so far about the arrogance and envy of Kalia. So far the entire chapter talks about how he has been so proud of his situation that he is the master of all that he surveys. Everybody is afraid of him. And now, in this situation, he has been completely smashed by the Lord. And, you know, in this situation, when it is not so often that we see a situation where a person with this kind of power, which is the most, we've seen this power being described in the earlier verses, we wouldn't even call it supernatural, we would call it something beyond our understanding, that just the vapors of his poison were such that even the birds flying over the lake would die. Imagine thousands of feet above the ground and birds just flying over and they would die. That was the kind of power he had, the fear that everybody had of him. And such a personality, you know, you can say it is on the level of Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha, the great demons of this of history. And for such a personality to actually be completely humiliated in public, we cannot even imagine what it is like. See, we have gone through maybe our own humiliations or setbacks. You know, we fail in exams and we commit suicide, or we face financial ruin, we are feeling, you know, bankruptcy, and we go into depression, take an overdose, imagine in our own little tiny world, or even if we would not even take a drastic step, but we get so much affected. Imagine his situation where he has such hatred towards Krishna, and he's been acting on that level, and then now, in front of everyone, he's completely exposed. And most important is that he's exposed in front of his own family, which is, you know, where generally, especially that's the male ego, he wants to, you know, prop up and show his power and strength and by whatever means to his family. And his family is very doting and, you know, in awe, especially such in this kind of situation when there's a king or he's has the authority over practically everybody in the universe. And then to be completely in one moment, in few moments, totally smashed in such a way that Krishna danced on every hood, totally, really physically smashed him, emotionally, in every respect, he was completely smashed. And then for him to come out of this and say these prayers at that moment, and that too with no justification. It is not that he's justifying or he's not giving an excuse, you know, but I, you know, you should understand my situation, why I said this, I'm sorry, not like that. He's just completely unequivocally, completely says, you know, completely naked, transparent, expressing his feelings. And this in turn indicates to us the power of the both, the mercy of the Lord, which is actually invoked by his devotees' prayers. So it is really the power of the prayers of the devotees, that is in this case the Nagapatnis, who were such sincere devotees, that just because when they saw, in fact they did not pray till they, initially they were actually saying that he was this kind of demoniac personality, he should be killed. But when they saw this change taking place in him, and they saw that he was completely now, you know, all the poisons were out, and he was totally humbled, and he was taking a humble stand, then they gave these wonderful prayers that we've heard so far to the Lord, expressing that, you know, please, you know, help him, because he's now in this situation. And such is the prayers, the potency and the strength of the prayers. This is what is demonstrated to us, that it immediately invokes, captures the heart of the Lord, and his mercy flows. So this is the process by which it works. So therefore, you know, when we look at our situations, just like Kalia is raising his coils, you know, he's raising 1,000 hoods. So he's raising each coil to show his strength. Just one coil could smash everybody. But here in Krishna's case, he had to raise various hoods because each one got smashed. So we also have the tendency to raise our coil, or in the equivalent of our, you know, learned situation, our strength, our wealth, our, you know, physical beauty, whatever attributes, it becomes uppermost in our mind to project that, to explain, to somehow capture other people's attention in some ways or the other. And if you don't do it directly, subconsciously also, that is really on the basis on which we live our lives. That how do I further my talent to increase my prestige? How do I further my capabilities to increase my wealth? So our life, our whole approach, every step that we do, the consciousness is primarily that whatever I've been given, yeah, at the most we might think either we don't believe, or if we believe in God also, it is, yeah, he's there and my service is done to him, and I, if I go to the temple, or maybe even if I chant and that's it, but my main priority is that I must expand my attributes. So it is like raising our coils. If we do not accept it, that this is actually coming from Krishna, and that he is the one who's actually provided what he wants in his own wisdom. So what he's given us in terms of so-called wealth, or so-called power, so-called attributes, all so-called problems are all emanating, created by the Lord out of his innate mercy. And actually, our reason for coming also to the movement is everybody loves to hear and you know, to how somebody's come, and it's really fascinating. But what we miss the point is that we do not know either we come to the movement and also even all our present sustenance, how many people have prayed for us? We have no idea. How many people around us, in this room, outside, have actually prayed for us and desired sincerely, selflessly in front of the Lord that we, that you know, let this personality or let this person, maybe we were completely against the Lord and then we have somehow come. There are so many cases, you know, we like where one member of the family comes and then almost inevitably the spouse or the child or the father or somebody gradually comes in, you know, the mother will come in, you know, and as a devotee. We may see that it is a natural progression because, you know, the child, for instance, the young boy or the girl has come, has got so much inspired. He starts giving, you know, he starts living that life. He changes his lifestyle. So now no onion, garlic, no this, no that. And then that's, in many cases, it may change at home. And then slowly the parents are not favorable. They come to the temple and then they may come and then gradually they also become. So this is an example, but this happens, you know, it starts with one and spreads. So we recognize that. But the deeper insight is that the prayers of that devotee, because naturally the devotee may be helpless, the devotee is praying, not for himself, but really because that devotee would be loving his or her child or his or her spouse or his or her father or mother and actually praying sincerely. So what is our, what the purpose, what is the, what I'm trying to say is that if you recognize this, this is the same prayer that we can always have for so many people. And first of all, to know, and we should be humbled to know that actually we are being protected by this unknowingly, and we may be taking credit, think that, you know, now today I'm able to do this, I'm able to, I'm now, see, you might feel internally satisfied that I'm actually, my desire has become less and for this object, and now I like to come to the temple. This is very nice. But we should be humble to know that actually, very often, it is other people's desires and prayers that have actually worked for us. So in the same way, we can reciprocate to others. Second lesson we also see here is the power of repentance. Actually, Rupa Goswami says in the Nectar of Devotion that one does not need to go to the performance of prayaschit, regulatory process of prayaschit, if one has a fall down. All one needs to do is to just to restart his devotional service, and that and he says it is his. The word he uses is, it is sufficient for reinstatement. It is sufficient for reinstatement. That means we are back to where we were, provided we are sincerely following the rules and regulations, which includes that if you have had a fall down or a setback, it means that we are facing humiliation or we are facing embarrassment and facing a great difficulty to come back, because once you had a setback, then our mind also is actually justifying what we are doing and somehow rationalizing all the steps we have taken. So in that process to come out is not easy. Again, the prayers will work, but from our side, that effort, at least we know, this is such a reassuring statement that really, if you overcome that level, and then, you know, we may have done something wrong, some we may have hurt somebody, we may have offended somebody, or we have actually stopped chanting for some time, or we've, you know, somehow some things have occurred in our life and we've moved back. But then we, something occurs and we hear a lecture or we come in association, or that's just the right circumstances come, and then we suddenly start getting a little taste. And then we are again in kind of depression, or we feel terrible that, you know, what have I done? This is what I should be doing. That's the moment when we can imagine Kalia's situation was millions of times worse. We are in a much better situation. So Rupa Goswami has given such a reassuring statement that all we need to do, that you don't have to perform any yagyas, nothing. Just follow the rules and regulations sincerely. That is not easy, because at that state, that the last thing we want to do is to follow. But nevertheless, if we pick up that baton and we take the challenge, we are in a position to really move back. And that, he says, is the mystery of the Vaishnav cult. The mystery of this devotional, this bhakti. It's a mystery. Nobody can understand how does this work. we understand through the scriptures that actually the mystery is in the sense that this is the reciprocation between the Lord and his devotees. And that reciprocation is what brings the, is really what actually attracts the devotee to the Lord's feet. And also, though Kaliya's case is special in, because it's very rare to see a demoniac mentality of this nature to have a total transformation. We have many examples in the Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrit where devotees have had temporary kind of, they go through this kind of mood. For instance, Indra we hear on and off, when he's had, for instance, during the Govardhan Leela, he completely forgets and he just is basking in his power, in his strength, and he suddenly finds that the prayers are stopped towards him. But then he repents and he comes down very humbly. Durvasa Muni also temporarily gets so angry because of Amrish Maharaj's, in his opinion, Amrish Maharaj's kind of, did not respect him because he broke the fast and after deliberately making him wait for 1 year. But then again, he was a devotee and a great personality. So eventually they came through. The Avanti Brahman is in the 11th canto of Bhagavatam is a case where while he led a very obnoxious life, means he was, people hated him because his family, he treated everyone badly. But then when he hit rock bottom, as they call rock bottom, is when you have no support, nothing, absolutely zero. You are, nobody is with you, you're just helpless. And literally, physically, when you hit the rock bottom, then he realized that actually, nobody is my enemy. Nobody is my enemy. The only enemy is my mind, which is the problem. The how I think, how my consciousness works. So I don't have to blame anyone else. It is entirely with me. So this we have many examples of this, but and therefore we can take hope. This I would say historic verse in the sense that in this chapter, this is the start of the complete transformation of Kaliya. And then eventually, in the next 4 or 5 verses, we see that he gets to, he completely humbles himself. And then the Lord, because Krishna, tells him to best you leave and go, leave from here. And he becomes a devotee. So we can, this is a very hopeful verse for us. Because none of us, even if we want to, we would be in a, we can't even follow in the footsteps of Kaliya because we don't have that kind of capacity. But nevertheless, we may be trying to. So even then, and if we may have done in the past, or if we were to do some of the things that he may have done, if he could be having such a transformation, so could we. So actually, for all of us, this Kaliya story is really one where we understand that it's never too late. And there is no other substitute but to sincerely come to the shelter. And we cannot play games with the Lord. We can play games with everyone. And we perhaps do. At least I do so. I'm assuming you may be doing. But, we think that we can get away because maybe with our wife or with our children or with our business colleagues, this, that. And game means you may actually, play a trick. You may say something, may do something which does not exactly mean, or you may, it may not be necessarily harmful, but you still, you may not be completely transparent. But this Krishna is not just outside, he's inside, he's everywhere. So as Paramatma, he knows our thought. He's the beginning of our thought. From him comes knowledge, remembrance and forgetfulness. As he said in Bhagavad Gita, so that means before the thought originates, he knows that we are going to think like this. So we cannot, so best is to, a wise man is someone who understands this and accepts that it is much better to and more intelligent to just be what we are and let him know what we feel, because he wants to know what our response is. He already knows the situation. Now he says, let me see what you do in this situation. So in that situation, let's not look at the past. Let's look to the now and the future as to where do we go from here. So wherever we are, literally as of this morning or till this moment, we have an opportunity to make advancement, to go to Krishna based on Kalia's progress. So now we can follow Kalia faithfully. The way he transformed, we can also transform. I also wanted to speak today on, because it's a very, very extraordinarily special occasion of the disappearance day of Shripad Madhavendra Puri, who's also DT is there in front of us. And actually, in the Adilila of Chaitanya Charitamrit, the Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, as well as the purport by Srila Prabhupada, they both actually highlight the critical importance of us, of Shripad Madhavendra Puri, on humanity, on history, on all of us, to, for times to come. And we've heard in the past also, but it is well worth, because sometimes in the galaxy of all these great personalities and acharyas, you know, they're all great, they're all tremendous personalities. But by our, by the very nature of things, you know, we are more aware of the immediate past. We are much more familiar with Srila Prabhupada's life and everything, because it was in this lifestyle. We have people in this room also who have actually seen him. And then Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, and then Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Gaurakishore Babaji Maharaj, the next 100, 200 years ahead, we are aware of it. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, yes. But generally, this, since this is an era before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we do hear, but we do not we may not actually see the magnitude of the impact this personality had had. And therefore, we can, we could just hear about this great personality, because he was in the same tradition as Shripad Madhvacharya. So in our parampara, Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya, a very great spiritual sannyasi. And he, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, was the third disciplic descendant from Madhavendra Puri. Madhavendra Puri's, I mean, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's guru was Ishwar Puri, and Ishwar Puri's guru was Madhavendra Puri. So his, just like Bhakti Siddhanta Maharaj is to us, the Param Guru, so is the Madhavendra Puri is the Param Guru of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And it is said that you know, he, when he spoke about Krishna, there was nobody who could, it was like nobody else had ever spoken like him. He had such purity, and constantly, you know, the words would flow, and just as everywhere he went, as we hear in the Brahma Samhita, every song is a, every walk is a dance. For him, it was like that. He actually, wherever he went, when he walked, it was in whatever capacity. As we'll see later, there were certain instances, but he was in such a mood, totally wrapped in Krishna consciousness, completely all the time, just chanting and dancing in his heart and also verbally. The era in which he came, that means the environment in which he was, that about 700 years or so before before us now. Actually, after Madhvacharya, Shripad Madhvacharya's, in the disciplic succession, the gradually over time, the process of worship had become very ritualistic, extremely mundane. And not many people are aware that actually Madhavendra Puri was the very first devotee to actually demonstrate love of God and the importance of conjugal relationship. I mean, so it is historical, because that was the start. It is a complete, which is actually what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then propagated fully. So that means till that time, you know, there was no love of God. It was purely on rituals. And he was the one who actually brought this and highlighted the importance of devotion, bhakti, the love of God, constantly through the holy names, through the chanting, and through Krishna Katha. We can also see Madhavendra Puri from another light, from the kind of people whom he interacted with and what they saw about him. One is Lord Nityanand, who's Lord Balaram himself. In Chaitanya Leela, he comes as Nityanand Prabhu. And in his life, at the age of 12, he left home. He went with some unknown sannyasi, traveled all over. And even he, when he traveled everywhere, he also experienced the same kind of environment which Madhavendra Puri had experienced, which is that there was hardly any devotee, really. And there was no real bhakti. They hardly met any, they never saw any devotional service or any love of God expressed anywhere. It was, even the great scholars would not even, would hardly speak about it. And then they were entirely book-driven, scriptural-driven, but not, they were missing the wood for the trees, as we say, or they were just following the rituals. And then eventually, by the divine arrangement, in the western province, when Lord Nityananda was traveling all over, and he met Madhavendra Puri. And then, because both of them were in the same mood, desperately looking for association, saintly association, and discussing Krishna Katha, they were so thirsty for it. the description of how they met, when they embraced in the first time they met, both fell unconscious. And then they spoke for something like 7 days, non-stop, just speaking and in ecstasy, discussing about Krishna. And they didn't want to leave each other. They were so keen to stay together, but then they had their own path. But Lord Nityananda actually took initiation from Madhavendra Puri. So Lord Nityananda was also a disciple of Madhavendra Puri. Eventually they parted because they had their own missions to go through. So then eventually Madhavendra Puri then traveled, and then when he at last came to Vrindavan, he did the Govardhan Parikrama. And in the after doing the Parikrama, then he went to Govind Kund, and he was sitting under the tree there. And he was meditating on the lotus feet of the Lord, just chanting to himself. And suddenly, out of the blue, one very beautiful looking young boy, a cowherd boy, just comes to him with a pot of milk and offers to him. He says that, my dear Madhavendra Puri, I know that you are fasting today. In our village, nobody fasts, so you must take this milk. So Madhavendra Puri was... when his trance was broken, when he looked, first of all, he had never seen anything so beautiful like this boy. He was so shining and effulgent. And secondly, he was shocked. He said, how did you know that I'm fasting? He had not spoken to anyone. How do you know I'm fasting? So he said, these ladies who are bathing in the Govind Kund, they have been observing you, so they told me. So... but take this milk and I'll come back, and I have to go now for milking the cows, and I'll come back later. So Madhavendra Puri took the milk and he drank that. It was really special nectar. He drank it and then he washed the pot, and then he was actually waiting. Now he got very agitated because he was very keen to meet this boy. He didn't know why. He was just wondering why I am feeling like this, because I want to, how quickly can he come? So he was waiting and waiting. The boy didn't return. Then at night happened, and then he went to sleep. And then towards the end of the night, early morning, just before dawn broke, and he went into a transcendental state of consciousness, and he got a dream. And in that dream, this cowherd boy appeared, and he took him by the hand, and he said, you know, I am Gopal, and in this area, I am the authority. And I have been waiting for you for a long time. And so he took him to the, in his dream, he caught his hand and he took him to the, right through some bushes. And in the right in the bushes, he said, I'm lying there. I'm sorry, he didn't take him there. He indicated where the bushes are and said, I'm lying in the bushes. And I have been... observing you, and I've been waiting when you can come. And this is because, when the priests who were taking care of me, they abandoned me here because they fled in fear because they heard that the Muslims were coming to attack. So I've been lying here waiting. So please get all the villagers, and then my desire is that you install me and put a DT, put a temple on the top of Govardhan, and pour as much unlimited buckets of water to refresh me. And then the dream broke. And Madhvendrapuri was quite astonished, you know. And he realized now that actually this cowherd boy was Krishna, because he said, "I'm Gopal." And then he was in simultaneous lamentation, and he was happy, rejoicing. Lamentation because he felt that I didn't know he was Krishna and I didn't serve him properly. But he was very happy also because he got the mercy of the Lord. So as indicated and instructed, he ran to the village of Anyur and got all the villagers and excitedly told them that Govardhanthari has actually come. And he came and he personally told me that he's actually in the bushes and I need your help and we have to take him. So then all the villagers came and the bushes were very thick. They had to cut through, and then finally they reached the spot which is indicated by Gopal. And there they found that there was a DT actually lying in the bushes. And actually it was so heavy that it needed the strongest of the men to somehow pick it up. And then with great difficulty they actually carried it to the top of the hill. And then they made an altar of stone. And then there was it is described like the celebrations and the installation as well as the celebrations was something really unique. This was the outpouring of love that Madhvendrapuri actually had. First though, all the villagers came and they brought everything that they had. So Madhvendrapuri actually did the aarti, and it is said that Prabhupada mentions that this is a demonstration of why Brijvasis are so special, because they surrender everything. See, here also the villagers brought everything, and whatever they had, whatever little they had, it was surrendered to in the glorification of Gopal. They were so excited and so happy about it. And His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj comments on this when he mentioned in his lecture that Krishna will see what you hold back. So the reason why the Brijvasis are so special is because they don't hold back anything. Everything that they give. Not just the material possessions, but their hearts and their minds and their, and all the consciousness they have is entirely surrendered. So in this way, they had a grand celebration. And then when the bhoga came also, everything that they had, they brought. And it is they had something like 900 buckets of water from the Govind Kund, which was brought up and poured over the of Gopal to refresh him. And then the sandalwood too, you know, and for making him for the shine. And then there were scented oils and all the other paraphernalia. Then there was Abhishek, Panchagavya Abhishek, as well as Panchamrit Abhishek. So it was a very elaborate process. It is said, and every day, different villages used to come up for the offering. So it was like each one's turn. And it is said that for 2 years, the celebrations went on. So this must be a record, I think, clearly, by any standards. It was such a ecstatic thing. And Madhvendrapuri was right there all the time. And at the top of Govardhan Hill, for 2 years, the celebrations continued. And then at the end of the second year, one night he got another dream. And this time Gopal came to him and in his dream and told him that I am I'm not still completely refreshed, though you, because I was waiting so long, for such a long time, in the scorching heat and in the, you know, all the heavy rains and the freezing winters. So I was for many, many decades. So therefore, I would like that if you go to, you yourself should go to Jagannath Puri and get sandalwood and camphor and apply it on my body. Now, from, you know, if you see the geography where Vrindavan is and where Puri is, more than 1,000 miles. So immediately, by that time, Madhvendrapuri had already trained and instructed his disciples and other villagers in the deity worship. So they were doing the deity worship and then he left alone immediately. And there again it is described how he was, though he had to walk 1,000 miles, His walk was like a dance, and he was so ecstatic, so happy all the time. At the same time, he was also very much suffering internally, because a great personality also, when he looks at others in compassion, because when he sees the suffering souls, and the environment was still so such that except for pockets like this, everywhere else it was still where there was either, if at all they were looking at spirituality, then it was more like a ritualistic thing, and there wasn't any physical presence of the Lord and any act of devotion anywhere. So he was internally feeling very sorrowful all along, right when he was walking through. And while he went through, finally he came to Shantipur. And at Shantipur, this is just outside Mayapur in the Navadvip area. And there he met Advaita Acharya, who's also, Advaita Acharya is the combination of Sadashiv and Mahavishnu. So, who is an eternal associate of the Lord, of Lord Chaitanya. So he, and when he met, and Advaita Acharya also was in a similar situation, because these were few devotees scattered all over who were actually in the same mood. And it was like a meeting of unions. It was like, of course, they're eternally together. And then here, in this Leela, they were separated for some time, because it was destined that they would meet at some occasion, at some particular time. And then again, they were extremely, they were ecstatic. They spent many, many days together discussing Krishna Katha. At the end of it, in very humble mood, Advaita Acharya also asked Madhavendra Puri to be initiated by him. And then Madhavendra Puri instructed him in the mellows of devotional service, and became his guru. And then he continued further. He went on, and then he went to a place called Remuna, because before he reached Jagannath Puri. There he had heard about this deity, Gopinath, because the Gopinath was a very special deity, and it had extremely a very opulent and special prasad. And he had heard that the offerings to Gopinath ji were something quite amazing. So he was very keen to know. He was thinking that let me understand how they make, how they prepare these items, so that I could then go back to Vrindavan and then prepare it for my Gopal. So he asked a Brahmin that, what are the offerings and what do they make and how do they make it? So the Brahmin said that actually, right now, the offering is going on, and it is they're offering sweet rice. So Gopinath was, Madhavendra Puri immediately thought in his mind that, Brahmin told him that this sweet rice is actually world famous. I mean, it is literally out in another, from another planet. That's why they call it Amrit Keli. It's nectar. It's literally nectar. It is not something which is a combination of material elements. So the immediately Madhavendra Puri was thinking in his mind that how, if only I knew, if only I could taste a little bit, then I would know what they put in it, and therefore I can then prepare it when I go back to Vrindavan. And the next second, the thought came that, how obnoxious, how condemned I am, that I am thinking like this when the offering is still going on to the Lord. So he was feeling extremely low. See the sensitivity of his consciousness and awareness, that even a fraction of a moment he thinking, it is only, we won't even think there's anything wrong in it. But, every moment, every thought is looking from the Lord's point of view. The Lord is actually undertaking the prasad. So he's completely in that mood. Even Madhavendra Puri is also in the mood. And then when the thought just comes to him, he found it offensive that actually when the Lord is actually having the prasad. So this is the relationship that he had. So then he, after the aarti was over, then he left, and then he went to a secluded place, to chant his rounds. Just outside the town, the small village. And then at that time, so after the aarti, then the pujari also, this was the afternoon aarti, so then pujari put the deities to rest, and he was also resting. And now the pujari got a dream, and then Gopinath came in his dream and told him that, pujari, I've actually played a trick on you, And because they used to offer 12 pots. There was a system, the tradition was they always offer, you know, 12 pots of sweet rice. So he said, actually, I have hid one pot of sweet rice. It is behind the curtains. And it is kept for my special devotee, Madhavendra Puri. So please take that pot and go and give it to him. So when the pujari woke, he immediately bathed and went for darshan and to the altar. And then he actually found, as sure as day, that the pot was hidden. And he was completely in ecstasy, the pujari, because this he understood the magnitude of this, that actually this is a direct reciprocation of the Lord for his devotee. So he took the pot and he ran to the village of Remuna and shouting, finding, oh, Madhavendapuri, Madhavendapuri, where are you? You're so fortunate, you are. The Lord has actually stolen this sweet rice for you. And because he couldn't find, because Madhavendapuri was in a secluded place, so everyone but Madhavendapuri heard. So practically the whole village of Remuna had heard, and Madhavendapuri was not there. And then finally, they came across Madhavendapuri, and this pujari fell at his feet and told him the whole story and said, you know, he's actually stolen this for you. And Madhavendapuri was very, very happy. He took that, and when he drank that, you know, it was so ambrosial. But after that, and then he washed the pot, he broke the pot, and then he broke it into many pieces, and then he wrapped it up gently in a cloth, and then every day he would have one piece of that clay pot. He would eat it, and when he would eat, he would remember this pastime and the mercy of the Lord on him. But Madhavendapuri was such a great devotee that he never liked any fame or recognition, because he always felt it should be entirely for the Lord. So he knew that now he was very embarrassed, and he was extremely uneasy that everyone is aware of this. He didn't want any pratishtha. He said everyone will think that I am something special because the Lord has done this for me. So of course Remuna, everybody knew. So he, in the night, he just quickly slipped out and he went on his way to Puri. But then before he could reach Puri, his fame had reached before him. His reputation had gone before him. So everybody was aware that there's the great Madhavendapuri for whom the Lord, and of course Gopinath was then, from then on, and still now, more than 500-600 years later, he's been known as Kheer Chor Gopinath. Because he stole the kheer for Gopinath. So Madhavendapuri went to Puri and Jagannath Puri. And in Jagannath Puri, he couldn't avoid, because everybody was aware. But then, anyway, when he told the pujaris the mission he's come for, that he's come all the way from Vrindavan only to get the sandalwood and camphor for Gopal. So now, of course, because he was a real celebrity and great personality, so the pujaris and all of they made most elaborate arrangements, and they packed 82 pounds of sandalwood and 8 ounces of camphor. And then, actually, in those days also, this was very, very dangerous to carry, because it was a very special commodity. So some things don't change. I think the value of commodities was very, very high. So he arranged a Brahmin as an assistant also, and an assistant to go with him, because again he had to go all the way back. So he went, he took, and immediately he left, because he didn't want to waste time. And on the way back again he came to Remuna. He had to pass Remuna, so he wanted to take darshan of Gopinath. And then in the night, again Gopinath comes in his dream. This is dream number 3. Just see, we can't even think of having one, but the Lord is so merciful on him. So in his dream, and he told him that Gopal comes in his dream. I'm sorry, Gopalji comes in his dream and tells him that, Madhavendapuri, you have labored so much for me. You have put so much effort going 1,000 miles all the way here, and you're carrying all this. So, and he was very happy to do it. He said, actually, there is no need, because I am non-different than Gopinath. So if you just apply the sandalwood and camphor on Gopinath, I will definitely feel the coolness in Vrindavan. So, you can leave it and apply it here only. And when he woke up and he then the Puri spoke to the Pujari and told him, and then everyone was very, very happy. So they applied it, and then for 2 months in the summer they applied, and the right through. And then that, of course, is something which is carried on for centuries. Now this story has actually been told by, this pastime has been was being told by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Ramuna to all the disciples. And when he was describing it, because he had heard it from Ishwarpuri, his guru, who told about his guru. And imagine the Lord speaking about the devotee. And then he was speaking as if, you know, he has several mouths. He couldn't stop describing him. And when he finished the description, just at that time, the aarti got over. And then the pujari came and gave the 12 pots to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then he took one, and then he gave 4 to his the devotees with him, and he gave 7 to the pujari and said, "You distribute it to all the people in the town." Now, beyond that, then he carried on further, Madhavendra Puri, and went to then he moved. Yeah, he had 2 very special sannyasis. I think we should know another dimension of knowing him. The greatness of Madhavendra Puri was that he had many disciples, but there were 2 which were the specially exalted. Of course, Advaita Acharya, we talked of Nityanand Prabhu, Mahaprabhu. But one was Paramananda Puri, who was actually the Uddhav in Krishna Leela. And a very, very great, and he became a very close friend also, very close friend of Mahaprabhu. One of his best friends, actually. And to such an extent that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually asked him to stay with him in his home in Jagannath Puri, which he did. So we can see that, you know, just like, you know, Krishna was the nephew and the best friend of Uddhav, same Uddhav as Paramananda Puri was also the best friend and spiritual. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was the, Paramananda Puri was a spiritual uncle of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he was, that was one very special relationship. And the second was Ishwarpuri, who actually was the one who, one of the leading disciples of Madhavendra Puri, who actually gave the initiation to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Imagine the Lord of the universe, when he has to choose to take initiation from someone, that has to be somebody special. And that Ishwarpuri, who is actually the disciple of Madhavendra Puri. So we can also see Madhavendra Puri's glories from knowing, you know, the, it's like the, how the tree is known by the fruit it bears. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, many times he used to praise Madhavendra Puri when he used to talk to his disciple. And he said that Madhavendra Puri is the root and the trunk of the tree of pure devotion of Krishna. This was a statement he made many times, that he is the root and the trunk of the pure devotion to the Lord. And repeatedly he mentioned this. So so Ishwarpuri was, and Ishwarpuri was, of course, got the special benediction from Madhavendra Puri, because he was he took such care of him, especially at the end, towards the end of Madhavendra Puri's life, when Shripad Madhavendra Puri was invalid, he was bedridden, he couldn't walk, and he was very old. At that time, there was another learned, scholarly devotee called disciple of his, Ramchandra Puri, who was taking care of Madhavendra Puri. But he was very scholarly, but he was so arrogant that he was actually instructing his guru, Madhavendra Puri, and telling him, you know, when Madhavendra Puri was showing ecstatic symptoms and he was crying for Krishna, and he's advising him that, you know, if you are really transcendentalist, you should not cry. You should be, you know, meditating on Brahman. Madhavendra Puri threw him out and he said, "I don't want to you near me. You're disturbing me." So then Ishwarpuri became a servant. And he was just the opposite. He was so loving and kind and so affectionate towards him and so humble. He was cleaning his stool and urine, and he took such good care. And Prabhupada writes that actually the when a great personality gives this special service to of this kind, which is very intimate and personal, to the disciple or to anybody who does the service, that is a very, very rare opportunity. And Ishwar Puri did such wonderful service that Madhavendra Puri was so happy with him, and he gave him the benediction and told him that you will become a great lover and disciple, a devotee of the Lord. And in other words, Madhavendra Puri transmitted his love of Krishna to Ishwar Puri. And Ishwar Puri in turn gave initiation to when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu humbly requested him to. So after that, when Madhavendra Puri, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was traveling in South India. Actually, the basis for his travel to South India also, one of the reasons was that he was to find his brother Vishwarupa, who was not there, who had left home. And that time they didn't know where he had gone. He had taken sannyas. So he actually went onward to Maharashtra, Kolhapur, then went to Pandharpur. And then he met a great devotee called Sri Rangapuri. Sri Rangapuri was actually also a disciple of Madhavendra Puri. So as soon as he came to know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to know that, because everywhere he went, he was just hankering to see any association of Madhavendra Puri through his disciples. And he immediately fell at his lotus feet and he gave him very warm, then had very loving exchanges. And is there any doctor even in this one? So Rangapuri was a very great personality who, because he had taken this, so actually Rangapuri did not recognize Chaitanya Mahaprabhu first. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu fell at his feet, and knowing that he is the disciple of Madhavendra Puri. And when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was, when he was prostrate, paying his prostrate obeisances, he was completely, he was trembling in ecstasy. He was so, he couldn't contain himself because he was at the lotus feet of a great disciple of Madhavendra Puri. And this Rangapuri, when he saw these symptoms, he picked him up and he was completely astonished. He said, "This cannot be. The symptoms you are showing, the love of God, can only come from someone who has been touched by the mercy of Madhavendra Puri. So who are you?" Then he tells him that I am a disciple of Ishwar Puri. When he heard that, Rangapuri was extremely overjoyed. And then their great exchanges over another 10 days, they just kept talking about Krishna. At the end of it, then Rangapuri asked him as to where are you from. So he said, "I am from Navadvip." The minute he heard that from Navadvip means, immediately he started thinking, he said, "This is astonishing. This, we have never had such kind of." He told him that it reminds me that when I was many, many years ago, I went to, with my Guru Maharaj Madhavendra Puri, I had gone to Navadvip, and we went to the house of one very great Brahmin Vaishnav. His name was Jagannath Mishra. And he was describing in great detail what a great devotee he was. And his wife, Mother Sachi Devi, she was the mother of the universe. She fed everyone. She was really like a mother to all of us. He went on and on. And then they had a son, called young son, Vishwaroop. And he was such a gentle soul. And then he actually left home. He took sannyas. He took the name Shankarananya Maharaj. And then he traveled, came finally to Pandharpur. This is where he resided. And this is where he left his body. Now, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had actually, that was the first time he heard that. He didn't know that what had happened to his brother. Then he revealed to him that I am actually in my previous ashram, Jagannath Mishra was my father and Vishwaroop was my brother. And actually I came here to find out where my brother was. And because there was a great reunion, Sri Rangapuri was just fainted in ecstasy hearing that same Jagannath Mishra, and now it is his son. Then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went further. He went to when he went to Vrindavan, he went to Mathura. And in Mathura, he went to, took bath in Vishramghat. And then he went to the Janmasthan of Krishna. And there the beautiful deity of Keshavji. And when he went to Keshavji, I mean, when he saw, then he started, he was again in complete ecstasy and dancing and abandoned. He didn't know the environment, he didn't know what was, who was around him. And one old Brahmin just came up to him, fell at, while Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was dancing, and fell at his lotus feet and got up, and then he started dancing with him. And it went on for hours. And even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also was not realizing that time, and the Brahmin also was in a completely different ecstasy mood. And the thousands of people surrounded, and they were completely thunderstruck. They're all Brijvasis, but they were all devotees, great advanced devotees. But when they saw this kind of mood, and they never saw anything like this before. And at the end of it, then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he came back to his regular consciousness, he took this old Brahmin aside to a solitary place and asked him that, you know, you are such an old man, but you're showing such a wonderful symptoms of love. Where did you get this from? I mean, where? What is your background? So he's saying, many years ago, His Holiness Madhavendra Puri initiated me, and I had come, I am his disciple. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu immediately fell again, prostrated his obeisances, took the dust off his feet. So, you know, we can see from various angles in that this great personality, Madhavendra Puri, was not even... Even among the highest standards of exalted devotees, he was in the highest levels of the devotees of the Lord. And we can just summarize by looking at who were the some of the devotees who actually took shelter of him, who got initiated by him or who took shelter of him. Advaita Acharya, who is a combination of Mahavishnu and Sadashiv, comes and takes shelter of him. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is his guru. There's Ishwar Puri. Imagine the guru of the father of the universe, the lord of the universe. He actually takes the initiation. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's param guru is Madhavendra Puri. Lord Nityanand, who is actually none other than Lord Balram. Lord Balram is the original spiritual master of all spiritual masters, and he takes, he becomes a disciple of Madhavendra Puri. Then Jagannath Mishra, the father, who's Nand Maharaj, who's the father of all the of the Lord of the universe, and he's the Shiksha disciple, and some say he's the Diksha disciple of Madhavendra Puri. Pundarik Vidyanidhi, who was Vrishabhanu in Krishna's Leela, and who's the, also the guru of Gadadhar Pandit, one of the Panchatattvas of Srimati Radharani. And Vrishabhanu is the father of Radharani, took initiation from Madhavendra Puri. Then Keshav Bharti Maharaj, who actually gave sannyas initiation to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is actually Sandipani Muni, who is the guru of the Lord of the universe. He comes and becomes a disciple of Madhavendra Puri. So we can see from this that this is not an accident. This is not just a coincidence, or that even among the highest levels of devotional service, and also he is the very first person who actually laid the path for understanding what is conjugal love, on which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then propagated. So he actually was given that service from the spiritual world to start the path of conjugal love, which was then taken up further by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to show us the path of bhakti and to put the highest levels of worship to Srimati Radharani and to Krishna. So we'll end here. If there are any questions or comments.
Prabhuji, it's a wonderful class. I cannot explain in words the way you have explained about Madhavendra Puri so clearly. I have one question. In the first part of your class, in which you have said very clearly that Praschit is not needed. It is better to start devotion from the beginning. Because suppose at any stage, but I understand that if we have, there is some mistake we have committed by doing devotional service, we want to do Praschit. So what you want to convey by that, that Praschit is not actually essential, or it's a wastage of time, I'm understanding, whether it is better to start from the beginning.
No, maybe I didn't convey properly. Actually, Praschit, if you go by the scriptures, then there is a whole elaborate process of, purificatory, regulatory process, which we one. So what is recommended to us by Rupa Goswami is that is not needed. Praschit is needed, but the whole process of ritualistic rectification of the Praschit is not needed. The best form of Praschit, one has to change over. The best form of Praschit is to start devotional service, to follow the regulative principles, rules and regulations. As soon as you follow the rules and regulations of devotional service, that is the highest form of Praschit. What I meant by Praschit earlier is the quote-unquote word Praschit, which is actually a very elaborate process which otherwise one has to go through. And there are many, many technicalities involved in various pujas and so on. That is not needed. Just stick to the path of devotional service and sincerely, the key word is sincerely, and genuinely, then actually the rectification starts. He says it is you're reinstated back. And he also says that is the mystery of Vaishnava cult. Nobody can explain, understand how it may look so simple, but actually we know that being sincere is not simple. Any other questions or comments? ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम की जय, शीला प्रभुपाद की जय, शीला माधवेंद्र पुरी की जय।